Forbes says the mined diamond industry is caught between a rock and a hard place. I'm not making that up myself. It's not my fault. That's because no matter how many changes companies make, mining for diamonds affects the environment. More diamond customers want to know where their gems are coming from, and they want them to be more sustainable. Cue the interest in diamonds created and hard-pressed in labs. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina, in for Kate Archer-Kent. And we're taking your calls about these jewels. Do you care where your diamonds come from or how they came to exist in the first place? What about the cost of diamond jewelry? And why do you care whether that stone is a diamond or some other material? You can give us a call at 800-642-1234. You can also send us an email if you prefer at ideas@wpr.org. Being a jeweler runs in Soha Javaharian's family. He's a 10th generation jeweler and also a gemologist, co-owns Soha Diamond Co. in Madison. Soha, thank you for being here on The Morning Show.
Thanks for having me.
Help us understand this difference and similarity between what a diamond is when it's mined and the lab-created variety. They're different, but they're not.
Sure. Great question. Yes. So lab-grown diamonds are in every way, you know, a real diamond. If you crystallize carbon, which is what diamonds are, they're one element. If you crystallize that carbon with heat and pressure, no matter where it took place, no matter how long it took place, it becomes diamond. The end result, that crystallization, is diamond. So lab-grown diamonds are in every way, chemically, physically, and optically, identical to their mined counterparts.
And do people that you talk with understand that, acknowledge it, or does it feel somehow less real?
I think the consumer perception is that it's possibly less real, maybe too good to be true. A lot of misconceptions about if they're real or similar or if they're an alternative, but they're in every way an actual diamond. So it does take quite a bit of education and maybe experience seeing them side by side with a mined diamond to actually see the benefits of it.
You work with clients who order jewelry that includes diamonds that are created in labs. What are they giving you for reasons that this is the preferred option for them?
Sure. I think it's a combination of reasons. Contributing factors would be they're ethical, they're moral, they're environmentally conscious. They're that diamond that everyone always wanted, but they just didn't know where it could come from. In that sense that you're not compromising anything by choosing lab-grown diamonds. And in fact, you're getting a better value. Your money goes further. You can save money, get a larger stone or a higher quality stone. Any of those combinations, based on the client's unique needs, we can accommodate with a lab-grown diamond.
And is that because the supply chain is just condensed? I mean, you don't have to go through as many people and processes to get it from, itself being a diamond to the client?
Oh, so surprisingly, the cost per carat of a rough diamond is very similar, I mean, within a few dollars, essentially, of a mined diamond that you were to extract from the ground. It's very labor-intensive, as you know. A million children still mine for gemstones and diamonds internationally. And with that information, I think it's heartbreaking. I think if a lot of people understood that and saw that, they would choose lab-grown diamonds more often. And I think that is changing over time. But yeah, it's a great question.
And I mean, we have kind of revered diamonds because of their rarity, because of the circumstances that are kind of unique that sure. create them. Where do they come from? Remind us of that, because I think sure. we know that they're rare, but we don't quite understand the circumstances under which they're created.
Sure. Yeah. So diamonds from the ground have basically come from miles beneath the earth with the weight of the entire world, essentially, and with temperatures that only the inner of the earth could create and pressures associated with it, have crystallized carbon. And over time, in fact, no one really knows how long a diamond grows for, but it can crystallize within, you know, a matter of a short amount of time, but it's trapped underground for millions of years. And so that that romance, that rarity of that process, not necessarily the rarity of the diamond, is so unique. Nothing else is like it in nature. And really the heirloom qualities associated with a diamond. It's a benchmark on the Mohs scale of hardness. It's a 10. Its thermal conductive properties are amazing. Its heirloom quality, with proper care, not too much care, but just proper care and usage, it can look the same in 50 years or 100 years as the day you were proposed to.
And that's different than other gems.
Yes,
sure.
Every other gemstone is in some sense inferior gemologically, scientifically, in terms of properties compared to a diamond. A diamond is truly a benchmark for its beauty, its fire, It's scintillation. It's brilliance. Nothing else looks like a diamond. If it does, it looks too good to be true, or it looks less lively, than a diamond.
Hmm. Soha Javaharian is a 10th generation jeweler, and we're talking about the fact that he sells diamonds grown in labs to his clients, what they're looking for, what it means to them. And you're part of this conversation. What questions do you have about diamonds themselves? Maybe you've purchased a lab-grown diamond before. Why did you choose that as the option? You can call 800-642-1234 and let us know what you think. Maybe you recently purchased a piece of jewelry with diamonds. Did you know where they came from? Give us a call at email us at ideas@wpr.org, or that number again is 800-642-1234. We talked a little bit about the cost of a lab-grown diamond. Is there an advantage, depending on the piece, to opting for one that is grown scientifically rather than naturally?
Sure. And that cost difference on the retail side, on the consumer side,
right,
is about 30% less expensive than a comparable mined diamond from the ground. And, you know, that is not only the one important factor to consider, but also, we're talking about a stone that was not mined for. There's no impact, a very, very minimal impact in terms of environmental compared to a mined stone, which is very, intensive on mining and the earth. And you're quite literally moving tons of ore for 1 carat of cut and polished diamond. Whereas on the lab grown front, you're just basically growing it in a controlled environment. Of course, you're using electricity. No one denies that. We're using it now as we speak here. So it's quite amazing.
Yeah, lab-grown diamonds, pretty new in comparison to the fact that you are 10th in a line of generations of jewelers. So how does this fit into that, the realm of jewelers and gemologists?
Sure. So I'm the first generation in my family to really offer lab-grown diamonds to the market. But lab-grown diamonds are not new themselves. General Electric, GE, first pioneered the process here in the United States in 1954. And since then, lab-grown diamonds were made generally for manufacturing, drilling, abrasives manufacturing internationally. And not until the last decade or two where the quality was brought to a level to be gem quality. And gem quality means that it just meets the criteria that's, subjective but beautiful in terms of quality for the 4 C's, the color, the clarity, the cut, and the carat weight associated with fine jewelry.
And so you saw them and thought, this is the direction I'll take things.
Well, I learned about them, and I kept asking questions in my previous experiences and education, and, no one could tell me anything bad about them. And I thought, well, why aren't more people choosing lab-grown diamonds? Why isn't there more conversation about lab-grown diamonds? And I think as an industry, a lot of people are shy, and they just want to continue telling the story of a mined diamond and the romance of that. But consumers are demanding more transparency, more ethics, more, transparency in terms of environmental impact.
I have to ask, did you get any guff from your family?
I got support, but, I got some questions about,
sure,
are they real? And, some misconceptions that I had to address face to face with my own family.
Sure. People who have been doing this for decades and decades. We're talking with gemologist Soha Javaharian about lab-grown diamonds. They're becoming more popular, and they're a contributing factor in a dip in sales for traditional mined diamonds. What are your questions about diamonds? Do you own one that you know was grown in a lab? Or maybe you shopped for a sustainable diamond where you understood where it came from? Maybe you don't really know and you kind of regret that you didn't ask. 800-642-1234 is a number you can call. There's a line for you. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. Our conversation continues here on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina, and it's The Morning Show. If you saw a flurry of engagement ring photos in these last couple of weeks, you are not alone. The holidays offer this sentimental opportunity to pop the question. And diamond engagement rings still the standard, and yet some couples are adding to their expectations when looking for the right rock. They want sustainable, environmentally friendly options. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina. We're talking with a Madison jeweler who's catering to that, selling diamonds that are grown in labs, not glass that looks like it's cut like a diamond, but real, scientifically identical diamonds. And we're taking your questions about diamonds and about other gems, how diamonds in grown in labs stack up against those mined from the earth. 800-642-1234 is a line for you. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Our guest is Soha Javaharian, and he's a business owner, also a 10th generation jeweler. And Greg from Southeast Wisconsin wants to join our conversation. Greg, thanks for being here.
Yeah, just real briefly. I make my own jewelry kind of as a hobby. And I started to source lab-grown white sapphire as a substitute for diamonds in something that's that, where I want that kind of brilliance. I was wondering about your guest's experience using that as a further substitute, being that a sapphire is next in line to diamond on the Mohs scale. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Greg, thanks so much for the call. What do you think, Soha?
Yeah, great question, Greg. So as you know, a white sapphire, the species is corundum, which is the same as a ruby or a sapphire. So it's the same family and classification for gemological properties. And it is a 9 on the Mohs scale of hardness, but the Mohs scale of hardness is not linear by any means. So a 9 on the scale is, much harder than an 8, 7, 6, but it's exponentially not as hard as a 10, a diamond. So a diamond is multiple times harder and therefore more heirloom quality than even a white sapphire. The refractive index of diamond, slowing light entering the actual diamond material, makes it less brilliant as opposed to, white sapphire is not as brilliant, won't show as much fire. But you're right, it does look like a diamond at a glance. But upon further inspection, the faceting, the hardness, the luster will not be the same as a diamond.
And Soha, you have some pretty extensive training and some of it through the Gemological Institute of America. I mean, how do you figure out all of these different pieces and know that and communicate it to clients?
Sure. So it's balancing the technical gemological kind of jargon with, everyday consumers and shoppers who are really well-educated and well-researched when they come to the table and talk to us about fine jewelry. So my experience, I'm a graduate gemologist, went to GIA, the Gemological Institute of America, out in Carlsbad, California. Very fortunate, I received a scholarship to become a gemologist. And after that, I worked at Tiffany & Company and also at GIA itself as a diamond grader. So my experience is quite vast in the sense of behind the scenes, retail, industry grading. It's quite amazing that lab-grown diamonds kind of meet all the criteria and exceed them in a lot of ways for many consumers.
And why do you think that customers need someone who has a variety of experiences and a depth of knowledge when they're purchasing something? What's at stake?
What's at stake is just reassurance, transparency, in that you're talking to someone, whether it's a retailer or an online jeweler, who can back up their knowledge with experience. It's not just a preference or it's in a biased opinion. We talk facts, we talk figures, we talk gemological properties that drive conversations towards impactful decisions and expensive decisions. We don't discount the fact that these are expensive, several $1,000 decisions that people make very infrequently, really once in a lifetime. So we as jewelers, my wife and I, take very seriously that conversation with our clients.
Soha Javaharian is a jeweler, also a gemologist, and we're talking about diamonds that are grown in labs, some of which he sells to his clients. Matt from Lodi is here with a question. Matt, what are you wondering?
Yeah, I was just interested. You mentioned a little while ago something about 1 million children that are helping mining for diamonds. And one thing, obviously in America, we hear that and we think that's tragic, but is this a form of livelihood for them? And if we remove that from them, which is as unfortunate as it is, are we actually just creating another problem, creating more poverty, perhaps? Mm.
Matt, thank you for that question. The question of sustainability is really complicated, Soha.
Sure. It really is. Matt, great question. Just to clarify, the 1 million children mining aren't just for diamonds. They're both for diamonds and gemstones globally. And a lot of that is backbreaking work. It's unfair labor practices. It's unregulated. And associated with to answer your question, lab-grown diamonds, I don't envision taking the place in the short term 100% of the mine industry. It's really complementary, and it's a subsector of the diamond industry. I wouldn't be here speaking to you today, Keely, without mined diamonds. I wouldn't be a 10th-generation jeweler without the history of diamonds and the aura of those diamonds. So we do appreciate all the work internationally everyone's done. But, you know, I can't really answer that question.
Sure. Right. It may be, you know, part of the equation, and that's on the individual then to decide what makes sense for them when they're investing in a piece like this. We now have Chris from Central Wisconsin who wants to join the conversation. Chris, thanks for calling the morning show.
You're welcome. Let me just through my phone is okay. Yes, I have a question. Hello.
Yes, we're here, Chris. What's your question?
Yes, okay. I have two questions. One is Mr. Sohai able to tell the difference under a microscope if he had two diamonds sitting there, if one was manufactured and one was not? And the second has to do with the value or the perceived value of a diamond if it can be manufactured. Does that negate the rarity of a diamond? Can these be manufactured, like a ton of them at a time? Or, you know, all of a sudden you're flooded the market with diamonds, that would decrease the rarity and the value then.
Ooh, Chris is taking us into the economics of it, too. Good questions there, though. So, how, what do you think?
Sure, Chris, thanks for asking that question. In terms of the difference side by side from a mined diamond and a comparable lab-grown diamond, no trained jeweler or gemologist, even myself who's worked at a diamond grading laboratory, couldn't tell a difference diagnostically. I'd be lying to you. Anyone would be lying to you if they told you one looks lab-grown and one looks mined. Now, there could be indications under higher power magnification with a binocular microscope. Those are tools that jewelers and gemologists may have on site to see a difference. But to answer your question, diagnostically, no, absolutely not. Indication-wise, maybe with inclusions or and that's becoming more and more difficult to do as well. So generally, no, absolutely not. You can't tell a difference side by side.
And Chris's other question is, can we just make a bunch of diamonds then?
So making diamonds is very capital intensive. It happens internationally, all over the world, even here in the United States. There are two processes in which you can grow a diamond. One's called high pressure, high temperature, HPHT. The other one is called CVD, chemical vapor deposition. They're both very technical. They both require seed crystal, which many people don't know, of a diamond. So you have a sliver of a diamond that you use to actually grow a diamond on top of, either upward or outward, and so on. So the post-production of that, I think one of your questions, Keely, before was, what happens after that? Well, once you grow a diamond, all the post-production is the same as a mined diamond. They're both rough. They're both somewhat ugly, in all honesty. If you saw one, you wouldn't recognize it to be a diamond. It'd be brown, yellow, included. So you have to do a lot of planning to cut, facet, polish, and by a third party, grade that stone to then finally bring it to a retailer to show to a client.
Fascinating. And let's bring one more caller into the conversation. Elizabeth from Eau Claire is here. Elizabeth, what are you wondering this morning? Hey, Elizabeth, are you there? All right, we may have lost Elizabeth, but Elizabeth's question is, if a big retail jeweler sells mined diamonds and says they're conflict-free, can I trust that? That's a good question.
Great question, Elizabeth. Well, I'll define for you. The Kimberley process, which is a certification scheme in 2003, was created globally to combat conflict diamonds and therefore make them certified conflict-free. The industry will tell you that 99.8% of all diamonds that are mined are conflict-free, but I think a lot of people think conflict-free means it's perfect. It's moral, it's ethical, no children mined for it, you know, no blood was shed. But I'll define for you and read it straight from the Kimberley Process website, how Kimberley Process, KP, they abbreviate it, defines conflict diamonds as, and I quote, rough diamonds used to finance wars against governments around the world. So that definition is noble. It's amazing. I'm thankful for it. I think at that time it was revolutionary to do in 2003. It's almost 20 years later, and we're at a point where consumers demand and expect more transparency, and that definition is too narrow. That doesn't mean children didn't mine for it. It doesn't mean it wasn't backbreaking work where people weren't fairly compensated. It talks nothing about environmental impact and resources used to mine for those stones and all the money and bloodshed associated with that business. So, you know, can you trust the retailer? I would hope you could, but in our experience, when you get a mined diamond in, it doesn't come with that actual certification. It's for rough stones. So you're taking the word of your vendor, of your wholesaler, of the mining company. You know, the jeweler did not mine for that stone, and I did not grow that in a lab. But growing diamonds in a lab does guarantee the origin and the conflict-free nature of it.
Sohat, this has been fascinating. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Sohat Javaharian is a 10th generation jeweler. He's trained from the Gemological Institute of America and co-owns Sohat Diamond Co. in Madison. Up next is news. Then WPR sports reporter joins the program to recap yesterday's back-and-forth Rose Bowl. Megan Hart is in California. The Wisconsin Badgers lost to Oregon by just 1 point. They scored 27. The Ducks scored 28. More details in a few moments. I'm Keeley Boltina. It's The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.